You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 10, 20, 30, 40.
Randy Carlyle took my number.
Exactly. Randy Carlyle stole my number.
There may be someone who passes Temu someday, but there won't be his equal. The Finnish Flash was truly what he was. He was worth the price of a ticket, and there are not too many players you can say that about. Brian Burke. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast. A special edition of the pod is always brought to you by GMC Sierra Trucks. Recently, Elliot Friedman and I had a chance to sit down and have an extended conversation with one of the best snipers the game has ever seen, Teemu Selänne, the Finnish Flash. Now, when you say the name Teemu Selänne, we all have different memories. Winnipeg Jets fans will remember the 76 goals, shooting the glove in the air, Dallas Eakins catching it. Anaheim Ducks fans will remember him lifting the Stanley Cup in 2007. Everybody has their own memories. Now, one of my memories of Teemu Selänne will be this conversation. A week and a half ago, Elliot and I caught up with Teemu and had this chat. Enjoy.
Scoring list, passing Jari Kurri, his 1,399th career point. He is now 19th all time.
No. He's going to say Weber or Chara. And from left, he scores! Puck gets over. And it could be point number 1,400 for Teemu Selänne.
Shot here, Selänne.
Up by this left of the point.
Shot there is Perry. Sliding save. Oh, there it is! Number 600. Everybody on the ice touched the puck first, but then all by himself, all alone. And number 600 for Teemu Selänne. The players off the bench. The entire Anaheim Ducks team is celebrating with Teemu Selänne.
To present Teemu with his Hall of Fame plaque, honored member Jari Kurri.
Pleased to be joined by Teemu Selänne. And I do want to ask you, before we start talking about your NHL career, talk about the book certainly as well, players and personalities that you mingled with in the NHL, I want you to finish a sentence for me. The best part about being retired is blank.
No schedule.
You like an unstructured life, being able to wake up and do whatever you want, not having a schedule?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, like over 30 years with somebody else's schedule, you know, I kind of enjoy that. That at least I can manage my time, and I want to stay active and busy, but not with somebody else's terms. You know.
You know, that's amazing because I've met a lot of players who say one of the toughest things after they retire is no schedule, because they're always told, be here at this time, be there at that time, do this at this time, and they have trouble getting used to no structure. You're like the exact opposite.
You know, I think it matters where you retire. If you retire in Anaheim, where it's all the activities and sun every day, you stay active, you know, and I love to play tennis and golf and be busy, but... You know, my own terms, and like I said, and there hasn't been a boring day so far.
So I remember Roman Josi, and who just signed a big deal today, and Yannick Weber, they play like tennis and golf in the summer. And I can't remember who it was. I think it was Weber, who's like the worst tennis player or golfer he ever played against. And he said Josi. And Josi got offended. And then I asked one of the Finnish players, who's the worst tennis player they played with. I can't remember which Finnish player it was, but he said it was Teravainen from Carolina. I said, he's awful.
Actually, he's not that bad. He has a bad forehand, but really good backhand.
Okay. Yeah. But guys get really offended at this. When I wrote that. So who are the best and worst tennis players you've ever played against who played hockey?
You know what? The golfers, there's a lot of bad golfers, but they're more like Russian guys because they don't play golf at all. Mm-hmm. Tennis, huh? Used to play with... Actually, Ty Domi was actually better than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I don't play against bad tennis players. So, you know, I can't name one like bad players.
You mentioned Ty Domi, and if you look over your shoulder, there's a Winnipeg Jets jersey. You guys played certainly together in Winnipeg. And when I think Teemu Selänne in Winnipeg, I think 76 and the goals. What are your memories of playing in Winnipeg? And after that, if you could, I want to sort of take you to a place where you talk a little bit about Don Baisley as well. But initially, what were your thoughts and memories of playing in Winnipeg?
Well, first of all, I've always said that I'm very lucky and proud that I started there. Great 4 years there, and you know, not only the city but the people, that they really were unbelievable. You know, the way how they support hockey players and they love hockey, it's just something so special. And obviously, in all those 4 years, they lived every day with me that journey. And I've always had a good relationship with the fans, but something happened in Winnipeg. You know, even now when I go back there, it's overwhelming because the people just like, they don't forget you. They just, they're so happy to see you, and it makes you feel really good, you know.
You know, when you set the rookie goal scoring record, we can all recall, you know, shoot the duck and the glove in the air.
And was knocked down. Now Domi flips it high. Selänne goes after it. Teemu Selänne breaks it. He scored!
Do you remember who caught the glove?
Dallas Eakins.
Do you ever talk to him about it? Now, of course, the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks.
You know, actually, I had a dinner with him 3 weeks ago. He moved in the same neighborhood than where we live. And, you know, we always joke about that. And he always tells the story that that's his most famous moment as a hockey player. But I'm very happy to see him as a Ducks head coach. And a great guy. And and hopefully they're going to do well. They have a good young team there.
Hopefully you made him pay for dinner, too. If he's taking your time, he should pay.
I don't remember. I think we split it.
Now, you said you wanted to ask Teemu about Baisley.
Anyone who we talk to who is represented by Don Baisley, the late Don Baisley, always speaks glowingly about him, not just as an agent, but as a friend, as a confidant, someone who was more than just someone who helped direct your money. Don Baisley.
Yeah, first of all, Don was an agent for Jari Kurri and some other Finnish players too. And when I was drafted, Jari told me that if you need a best agent, we have one. And obviously, Don living in Winnipeg, you know, he was a huge factor for my life too. And I always said that he was like a second dad for me. You know, he was every day around and he called and make sure that I got everything what I needed. And, you know, it's he really took me under his wings and he was the guy that, you know, helped me so much. And he always tried to remind me to just save the money. Don't buy cars. Don't do anything. Just save the money every time.
Did you listen?
No. And you know, a lot of times when we had a lunch or dinner or something, I tried to keep the conversation out of the cars, you know, because he knew that I loved the cars. And but, you know, like he was, like I said, he was an important person in my life.
So what was the angriest he ever got at you for spending money on something?
You know what? He was very even keel, you know. He never got really, really mad. And I think that's why all the GMs loved him too, you know, because if you talk about Don Baisley, like the, everybody has only great things to talk about him, and what a gentleman he was, you know.
You know, you talk about your love affair with Winnipeg. I remember in 2007 when you went to the Stanley Cup final. You know, we talk about in Canada, you know, we cheer for the Canadian teams to win the cup. I remember the late Randy Turner, who was an excellent writer in the Winnipeg newspaper. He was sent to cover that series, I think from the Free Press at the time. And after every game, he made sure he had to speak to two people, Randy Carlyle and Teemu Selänne. And
Winnipeg
said,
boys.
And he said, Elliot, it's maybe hockey night in Canada, but the province of Manitoba is cheering for the Ducks. They want the Ducks to win the Stanley Cup. And I always remember he said, we're not apologizing for it. We want the Ducks to win. It was great times. Like, they've never forgotten you. They've never forgotten you.
Yeah, I always remember when I got traded, you know, how tough it was and how fast everything happened. They told me right after practice, I still have a helmet on when I got the phone call pretty much. And next morning, I'm gone. And I didn't really have the time to say goodbye for my teammates even, and the friends and the fans, you know. And then I always remember when Winnipeg got the team back, I checked right away the schedule, when we're going to be back in Winnipeg. And, you know, all those years that I didn't really go there. And then when I went back to play first time, it was amazing. Like, even we played night before in Chicago. We were in the town maybe 3 a.m, and there were still a couple hundred people waiting in front of the hotel and chanting my name. You know, it was just something that you don't see that very often, you know. But like I said, special people in special place.
This is a timeout on the ice, but we are anticipating a tribute in the building to Teemu Selänne, so we are going to keep it right here at MTS Center in Winnipeg.
In 1992, a young Finnish hockey player arrived in Winnipeg. He captured our hearts and set the hockey world on fire. He's gone on to become one of the most prolific NHL scorers of all time and an international hockey legend. Tonight, we ask that you join us in saluting him for his amazing hockey career and his unwavering passion for our city.
The other thing I remember about that Stanley Cup final, Scott Oak did a story in one of the games about all your friends who flew over from Finland and they drank all the alcohol in the plane.
They can drink.
Yeah, well, Finns are known for certain things, yeah. And drinking is absolutely one of them. Not that that's bad. Canadians do it very well, yeah. Too. But I remember him reporting that they were over the Atlantic Ocean and they said, I'm sorry, we have no alcohol left on the plane. Are you still friends with all those guys
absolutely.
Today?
Yeah. They're pretty much my childhood friends. And I think maybe like 10 years when I was in NHL, I promised that if I make it to the finals, I'm going to fly all my buddies, 20 guys, to the finals. And I pay everything. And that's what happened. You know, it was expensive promises, but it was worth it.
Did you play that year in the playoffs for free then? Because your bonuses went to all your buddies.
Exactly. I thought we were going to get paid from playoffs too, so it's going to cover something, but they didn't.
What were your memories of like that moment as the clock clicks down and it finally dawned? I mean, everyone was won the cup, has that moment where you finally realize this is the dream and I've done it.
You know what? It was great because, you know, we were up 6-2 like 5 minutes ago or 6 minutes ago, and I didn't want to go out there anymore. And I was just like trying to soak everything in and enjoy every second, you know. And then Carla was just putting me in and I said, I don't want to go. No, you're going. And so I had to go. I always played every second shift for some reason. He thought it's going to be my last game maybe or something. But what a great feeling it is. And I was waiting 15 years to even get the chance to go third round, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why it felt even better. So that's why I knew like how Ovechkin, how he felt when he won, you know. When you have to wait something, big dream, you know, for a long time, it feels good, you know.
Were there other players on that team, and that was a loaded team too, yeah. Were other players on that team that, of course, you're happy for yourself. That's okay, you actualize what you've always dreamed about. Were there other players on the team you said, you know what, I'm really happy for that guy and that guy?
Absolutely. We had a lot of guys like Pronger, Todd Marchand, Sean O'Donnell, those guys that they were a long time in the league too, and they never had a chance. And obviously Scotty Niedermayer, he won already three times. And his brother Rob, I think that was big motivation for him to win with his brother. And we try to remind each other every day that, you know what, I don't think you guys are going to get many chances to win again. So this is the time, you know. And then we had young guys like Getzlaf and Perry and those guys. And they probably thought that they're going to win 4 or 5 easy, no problem. This is easy. But, you know, it's so hard to win in NHL, you know.
Do you ever go back and watch any of your old games or old moments or anything like that?
Not really. But every time when I see the highlights, it's a great feeling, you know. It's I don't really miss the game,
mm-hmm.
but I miss certain moments and still love hockey, but not like I used to.
I understand that.
That's why I only skate once a year.
But I'm sure many people, like, we always ask this of players after they retire, how many of your friends tried to recruit you onto their men's league beer hockey team to come out a couple of times a week? Did you get those phone calls?
All the time. And you know what? But in Anaheim, that league is not very good, you know. And but the same beer.
The beer is good.
Yeah, but they are, you know what? They are 11 o'clock at night. And like yeah. we were talking about, I have better things to do 11 at night. So
I remember I interviewed you probably about 20 years ago, and I asked you if we'd see another 76-goal scorer. And you said, no way. And the game was different then. That was the clutch and grab era.
Yeah.
Now, do you think we could see a 76-goal scorer?
I don't think so.
No.
You know, I think the hockey was, you know, I think that time we had two really good lines every team. Mm-hmm. And then third line was okay. And fourth line was not very good. Now every team has four great lines. And the hockey is more speed and more skill. Now you can, if you can't skate, you can't play anymore. And I remember that, you know, in the old days, the defensemen, they were big, strong, but quite slow.
Mm-hmm.
And as a fast skater, you know, it was big advantage for us that, you know, but the same hand, like I said, the grabbing and holding was unbelievable. So yeah. That's why I really enjoy to watch the hockey these days. And I think the hockey is so good now because every team has so many great players and it's fun to watch, you know.
They're talented.
You know, one of the phenomenons we're seeing most specifically in basketball is players going as a pair to teams and loading up and making super teams.
Yeah,
we haven't
started
seen that in the NHL except for you and Paul Kariya when you went to Colorado. Can you take us back to those days and that decision?
You know what? I was ready to come back to Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
And but then Paul got some issues with his contract negotiating with the Ducks, and he got so mad. And he called me, you're not coming there. We're going to go somewhere else. I'm like, what? I wanted to come home. And, you know, the thing is. But, you know, then, you know, we start thinking about what place that could be, you know. And then, obviously, have a chance to play with Forsberg and Sakic and Robbie Blake and those guys, you know. Then we decided, let's call Don and let's see if this is even possible, you know. But, you know, like when Paul Kariya gets mad, you know, he has so strong principles that he didn't want to sign with the Ducks at the time. He got so mad. And then we went to Colorado, and too bad that didn't work out because we had a just unbelievable team. Oh. But, you know, obviously the sad thing was my knee was really, really bad. And Paul, he only played 25 games too. He got hurt right away. So it didn't work out. But that year actually was very important still. You know, I think I realized how important it is to be healthy and how much it means to me when I'm happy with the hockey. It was a tough year for me. And when I got my knee fixed the year after during the lockout, I was like a new man. And after that, I enjoyed the hockey by far the most.
You know, two things about that. First of all, I remember your last game before you got surgery was the World Cup final in 2004, Canada against Finland. Yeah. And I remember in the morning at the morning skate, and we were broadcasting it on CBC at the time, you were telling us all that this might be it. Because we knew there was a lockout coming, and you saw yourself maybe playing overseas in Finland and not coming back to North America. How close were you, do you think, to your NHL career ending on that day?
Yeah, I think I was thinking that it might be, you know, because I decided even before that I'm not going to play one more game if I'm not 100%, you know, because I didn't enjoy that, you know. It was just like I found myself driving to the rink and I was not smiling. Mm-hmm. So I kind of knew I'm going the wrong place, you know. And my first plan was that I'm not even going to play the World Cup, but our coach was just talking like even 70%, you're going to be better than a lot of other guys. And I need you in the dressing room and stuff, you know. So I decided, okay, I play that. But when you can't play your level that you always played, you don't enjoy that same way, you know. So after that, I said, let's see what happens. And, you know, even the lockout was bad for hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I think it saved my career. And then I have a chance to rehab my knee like 7-8 months. And when I realized that it's going to be 100%, I was the happiest kid in the town. So,
are you healthy now? Like, how's your body now?
And my left knee is still, you know, same knee is still bothering. But my friend, the doctor who did that, you know, did an excellent job. And he gave me 2 years. He said, I'll give you 2 years with this knee. And I played 9 more. So it worked out pretty good, you know.
That's a good doctor.
Yeah.
You mentioned that the lockout was good for you physically. What did it do for you mentally? Did it give you a reset on the game, change the way you felt, because you know what it's like. I mean, you play, then every day you're in that hamster wheel of same thing over, and everyone had a chance to pull back and have a look at their careers.
I think the mentally it was kind of a little bit confusing because I didn't know if I'm going to play again, if the knee is going to be, but same hand when I knew that there's no hockey, I was okay with that. My mind was very calm. You know, I said, okay, now I have time and, you know, I don't have to think about that. But if there would be a season and I tried to rush back and think about that, you know, maybe not, you know, it would be a different story, you know. And now I had no rush, you know. So I think that really helped me, you know. And like I said, after that, even the first year when we didn't win yet, I was the happiest guy go to the rink every day. And you don't realize how happy and lucky you are before something bad happens, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was a good eye-opener for me because I think on that time, everything had been so smooth and nice, and I didn't really realize that, you know, how lucky I was.
Further on the lockout as well, if there would have been a shortened schedule, they had that St. Valentine's Day meeting, if it would have worked out and there would have been a short schedule, do you think you would have played?
No, absolutely not. I think first time I started feeling really good was like a March, end of March, and that was already like a playoff time. So I there's no way, you know.
How different was it that I'm always fascinated with the year 2005-2006? Because there was some crazy stuff that happened in the NHL that year. Everybody learned how to play the game again. And it was a different style, new enforcement. The league looked different, new logo. Everything was different about the NHL. How was it different for Teemu Selänne?
Well, I think the biggest change was the rules.
Yes.
You know, I think the guy like myself, like whose game is more all about speed and skills, you know, it was a great news, you know. And that we knew that we're going to have more power plays, especially the first year, because it takes a lot of time to players to adjust that new style. But I think I got just new wing, you know, new wind. And, you know, I was so excited every day. I was like my first year almost. I wanted to prove myself that I can play, I can have success, and I can still do some damage. And luckily, Brian Burke gave me a chance to come back to Anaheim. Randy Carlyle was the coach, so at least those guys believe me. I knew I'm going to have a chance to come back and show, and rest of it on my own hands, you know. And I'm very, very thankful for that.
Okay, I got three last ones. Number one, you mentioned Paul Kariya and how once he makes up his mind, you can't change it. For years, the Ducks wanted to bring him back in, and he was like, no, I'm staying out. How much of a role did you play in saying, Paul, it's time to come back? Hockey needs you just to be a part of it.
You know what? I have done a lot of work for that. And, you know, the thing is, even I don't think a lot of people know this, but right before he retired because of concussions, it was one phone call away that Paul would play his last seasons with me in Anaheim. And I thought when he called me that mid-July, I thought he's going to tell me the news that I signed. But he said, you know what, he did the last medicals and the doctor said, no more. And so it was pretty close that he would come back. But after that, you know, he was very silent for so many years. He didn't want to have anything to do with the hockey. He gave me like maybe 20 pairs of gloves and 10 pairs of skates and his old hockey net from garage and just give it to somebody. And little by little, I start talking about a little more. At least you have to show up, you know. And he promised to come my last game, and he came. But now he's in, I think that Hall of Fame thing and everything, I think he's ready to start coming around little more than before. And so happy to see him doing well, though. Like, he's surfing every day and laughing, and he's still living his little bubble. But
does he still drive the same car, or does he have a new car now?
No, same car. Something's never changed.
Second one, as you know, Brian Burke is now working with us. Give me the most embarrassing Brian Burke story you have, that if I tell him this on the air, he's going to turn all red.
Well, first of all, those stories I can't tell here. But this guy, you know what, he's a beauty. You know, it's obviously he has his own style to hang that
the tie
and everything. And I always remember in the playoffs against Dallas, you know, we won in Dallas, and they told me the bus is 10:20, but you know, I was in the media or somewhere, and they changed at 10:10. So I'm taking my time, and you know, like, I'm signing autographs at the games, and So I'm like 10, 19, I go to the bus. I was always the last guy. Never late, but last guy. And he started giving to me. He's yelling me like I'm late, blah, blah, blah. We almost left you. And so I said, Berkey, fans, they pay your salary too, so just keep smiling. And but, you know, he was the guy that he always, the players were so important for him, and he was willing and ready to do whatever it takes to keep the players happy. And, you know, he wants to be the tough guy, old school tough guy, and love that guy.
You know, if you're 9 minutes late and the bus is still there, that's when you know you're a good player, oh, Taylor. No. That's when you know you're a good player. Last one I have for you, here it is. What is the fastest you have ever driven a car? Huh.
350 kilometers per hour.
Oh my God.
Where?
Yeah, Nürburgring.
On the track?
Nordschleife, yeah. I was driving 24 hours race, and there's a one straightaway, it's probably like 3.8 kilometers. The one straightaway. It's over 20 kilometers one lap. And that was just like, you're just squeezing your hands.
How were you nervous? Like, what was
yeah,
it
Yeah, you know, I think when you go over 300 kilometers, the speed starts, you know, feeling, you know.
Wow.
Same thing with the bike. I went 320 one time, and it was 250 is nothing. And,
what?
Yeah.
Is that not terrifying?
It is, but when you're young and stupid, you do things like that.
That's awesome.
But talk about the speed. When I went up with the Blue Angels, that speed.
Oh.
7.5 Gs and stuff.
Did they make you throw up?
They probably could, but they didn't. You know, I did pretty good, but great experience.
You're making a big tour here. Yeah. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we start in Saskatoon and then Winnipeg and then 2 days here in Toronto and then Thunder Bay and then home. It has been busy but fun, you know. It's this whole process has been fun, and it's great to see when the Canadian fans are so...
Lots of Finns in Thunder Bay, you were saying before?
You know, it's the biggest Finnish population out of Finland, so I'm expecting to see some Finns, and I heard there's a great restaurant called Hoito, so I'm going to stop by there too.
All right, very good. Thank you so much for doing this, Timo. And what is it? Wonderful career. Best of luck with the book. I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.